Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus's strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Well, welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. My name is Glenn Underhill. I'm the host for our incredible time today. Just so excited about this podcast and been looking forward to it for some time. Real quick intro, I am the pastor of spiritual development at Cross Creek Church, and I also am a trainer and coach for Disciple First Ministries, which is hosting this event, and just great organization that really works to empower the church to make and multiply disciples like Jesus. And so today we are talking about something I think that leaders come in contact with quite a bit. But before we kind of launch into what we're going to talk about, which is all about conflict, I think every leader at some level, whether you're a pastor or a ministry leader, you have to have conflict that you have to address. So we're going to be talking about that. But before we do that, I wanted to introduce a couple of my friends that I have on with us today. So the first one is Craig Etheridge and also Dr. Riley. But Craig, I'll let you introduce yourself real quick, and then we'll ask Dr. Riley, who is an expert in this field, to come alongside.
Absolutely. And
which, by the way, I'm looking at you just having this little thing of water over here, and I'm noticing no topo.
It's so lame. So it's just like normal water. I don't know. Why am I drinking this? I don't know. That's like two times I've showed up without my famous topo.
I'm getting concerned, very concerned.
Yeah, I know. I need to get back on that. But Glenn, good to be here. Good to be here with you. Dr. Riley, good to be here with you. Yeah, my name is Craig Etheridge, pastor at Cross Creek Church and founder of Disciple First. And we're just super excited about investing in leaders. And hopefully you're going to find a great amount of value from this conversation as we talk about conflict, because conflict is something we all deal with. And if you're breathing, if you can fog a mirror, you're going to have conflict. And it's at home, it's ubiquitous, it's everywhere, right? And so we're going to talk about some strategies for really making conflict productive and helpful, and even really taking you to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I we're going to get into this. I know we're just doing introductions right now, but I just think about, you know, if you can really deal with this piece, man, that just unlocks so much of your ministry. And if you can't deal with this, it really hinders you. So I'm really excited to be here, Glenn, and be a part of it.
Great. Glad you're here. Dr. Riley. Dr. Riley's a great friend. We love having her. She's also a member of Cross Creek Church.
Right.
She'll tell you a little bit more about that. But man, Dr. Riley, thank you for making the time. She really is quite an expert in this area of conflict, and she's been a tremendous friend to our ministry in helping us unlock some conflicts at some times around here. And so, again, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Good to be here. My name is Bernice Riley. Y'all always call me Dr. Riley. I think, well, that's my husband or my father-in-law, you know, but we joke at our house, and my husband says we're a paradox. Because he has a doctor and I have a doctor, so.
But that's really good. I like that. I'll have to remember that.
But I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I have a private practice here in Colleyville, Soul Care Counseling, and we are all about helping people deal with conflict. The bulk of my practice, the meat and potatoes of my practice, is couples counseling. So deal with a lot of conflict. I'm an emotionally focused therapist. So EFT has a very unique way of approaching conflict, which is to say, let's look at what is at the root of that. Let's look at the emotions behind it, mm-hmm. and see if we can understand what is going on inside of people that is driving this conflict. So we seek to kind of get to the root of it.
Great. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. We're going to dive into that right now.
This is going to be really good. So let's just jump in, right? Let's make the most of our time here. So, you know, I don't know about the two of you, but I know from my own personal experience, dealing with conflict is probably one of the most difficult parts of leadership, bar none. I'd just like to hear from you guys. Why do you think conflict is so difficult, yet so absolutely critical in the way we go about dealing with that as well?
Yeah. Wow, that's a – the simple answer is sin, you know.
Right.
But the really complicated answer is, well, what is it that's triggered inside of us when we feel threatened? You know, because when conflict comes up, it's because something in us feels, uh-oh, this just got dangerous. I don't mean necessarily physically dangerous, right, although that could be possible. But we get really threatened, you know, our personhood, you know, our value to other people or how we're valued or seen in that moment becomes threatened. And we get on the defensive, you know, we move into self-protection, which is always the movement away from reconciliation or vulnerability. It's a move towards self-protection and keeping ourselves safe in those moments.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, I think as a leader, you're always injecting change into the equation, right? Because leadership is moving from one point to another point,
right,
and not everybody wants to do that. And change is very difficult for people. And so that just invites, I think, a lot of conflict from just strictly from a leadership standpoint. And so understanding people, understanding their fears, understanding, like you said, the emotions behind what they're dealing with, to help them go with you is essential really to making that move. And yet some leaders, I think they either just bulldoze, they don't care about what you think, we're just going to roll over. We're just going to have a trail of bodies behind us, but at least we're going to get there. That's one approach. It's not always a good approach for longevity. But then there's another approach where we're so afraid, we're so paralyzed to upset anybody that we don't do anything, you know, and we can't really move forward because we're so afraid that we're going to upset somebody, or maybe just as a leader, you just have so much conflict that you just start to wear down. Mm-hmm. You're like, I just don't know that I got the bandwidth to have another hard conversation about this, or you just get weary as a leader. And so you become avoidant. And I think that's not good either. That's also really bad too. Yeah. So I think we're trying to avoid both those extremes and try to find out, how do we pace ourselves through this, and how do we address conflict and not see it as something bad that we're afraid of, but something that we, you know, anticipate, we know it's going to happen, and that we can lovingly navigate people through. That, boy, that sounds so good. Like, you know, when you're talking about it, but when you're in it, your gut clenches up, and you know, there's that fight or flight kind of thing that happens. And Glenn, you and I talk to leaders all across the country, and almost every one of them, I mean, almost everyone, when you really peel back the top layer, they're dealing with some major conflict in their church or at home, and they're just, you know, they're just kind of beat down. And not really sure how to do it. And so, again, they probably are avoiding. So what we're trying to do in this episode is to maybe have a strategy. I think sometimes if we kind of – it's kind of like this is probably a really bad illustration, right? But if you were like – if you knew Taekwondo or something like that, and you practice certain moves, then when you kind of get in the moment, there's some muscle memory that you're not quite afraid of it because you kind of know what you're going to do. And I think with conflict, if we could have kind of some moves that we know that we're going to go to, that we don't have to panic in the moment, we could just kind of shift, you know, and have some muscle memory with regard to that, then that might be helpful.
Yeah. And I think that is sometimes what causes leaders to not address conflict, right? Is because they've said, well, I don't feel very equipped on how to do this. And therefore I'm not going to get an outcome that maybe is going to be really relevant to this situation. And so, man, it's just easier to duck my head to it. And what we tell leaders all the time, leaving conflict alone and not addressing it is not a recipe for success.
Yeah.
Because it will eventually, it'll come back and it'll circle around and you just can't avoid it. And so I really do think hopefully today, those of you that are listening will really hear what I believe is a very effective way to handle conflict in any size or proportion. Mm-hmm. The principles are solid because they're right from Jesus's life and mm-hmm. and really even, because I think Jesus was addressing these issues because there was conflict stirring around Jesus all the time.
All the time.
I mean, the religious leaders were in conflict with him. Sometimes his own disciples were in conflict. The crowds were in conflict. So Jesus was continually facing conflict. There's a statement that I think, Craig, I heard you say one time. You said that often we see conflict as a horizontal issue, but Jesus said that conflict is also vertical. Mm. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, well, you know, in Matthew 5, Jesus is talking about conflict, Matthew 5, 23. He said, so if you are offering your gift on the altar and there you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled with your brother or sister and then come and offer your gift. And it's interesting, Jesus equates or ties someone's worship to how they deal with conflict, you know? And so he's there saying, hey, you can't be at odds with people horizontally and still be okay vertically in a relationship with God. That if things are not right horizontally in relationships, then that's going to fracture your relationship with your Father. So you need to go make those things right. And I think in that passage that I just read, Jesus talks about first go, you know, you take the initiative, you know, you seek out to try to reconcile. Don't dodge it. Don't hide from it. Don't kind of mask it or minimize it or say, well, they should come to me. You know, the problem was really with them. They should come to me. We hear that all the time. And I probably said that, you know, so it's not like everybody out there is doing it wrong and I'm not. I probably felt the same way at times. But Jesus says, you go to take the relationship. And then he said, be reconciled. And this idea of reconciliation, man, that's work. That's hard sometimes, and it's not always one conversation. But this posture of seeking reconciliation, I think, is at the heart of what Jesus was talking about. Dr. Riley, is that how you read what Jesus was saying there?
Yeah, it just kind of what hits me when I look at this scripture. Jesus doesn't leave it up to the person who started the conflict mm-hmm. to make it right. He's just saying, if you are at the altar and you become aware, in other words, you get in the presence of God and God begins to make us aware, right, mm-hmm. of maybe where things aren't right, and you become aware that this is a problem, then you go, whether you started it or not,
right.
You go and you do what you can do to reconcile it, you know. And I think that's, we get into that thing, well, I didn't start it, so why is it on me? Why should I have to, you know, reach out? But it takes a lot of courage to reach back towards someone that you know is upset with you or is at odds with you. And it kind of reminds me of what John said in 1 John, where he says, you know, you cannot love God and hate your brother. Mm-hmm. Hate there isn't intense dislike. It's just that hating of, I choose to not be in fellowship with my brother.
Mm.
And so, you know, God is saying, no, you can't say you love me and you want to worship me and follow me and not choose to be in right relationship with those that you are should be in fellowship with.
Yeah, I sometimes hear people say, well, I love Jesus, but I can't stand so-and-so.
Not so much.
And I'm like, okay, somewhere there's a disconnect here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Jesus is saying, right? Is that it really is one command expressed in two ways.
Right.
You can't say you love God and not love others, and you can't say love others and not like love God. So mm-hmm. there's this idea that there has to be they're mutually connected together and expressed through love. I do know that both of you have a strong sense of this idea of the importance of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And that one of the things I know that both of you firmly believe is the idea that reconciliation really does require clarity. Mm-hmm. So why must it be very clear when we talk about this idea of reconciliation? It's the hard work, it's the effort, the energy. But so before we even kind of lean into this strategy, because reconciliation really is the win. Yeah. So to speak, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so right. Why is reconciliation? Why is it require clarity?
Well, when I think of clarity, I think, Glenn, that I have to be clear with my own emotions. I have to be clear on what really happened. I have to be clear on what that person is feeling. A lot of times mm-hmm. we're in conflict, we don't understand what this other person is dealing with, what they're thinking about. We paint people with a broad brush, and we kind of create a caricature many times of other mm-hmm. people, and well, they're just this, or they're just such and such, and reconciliation means I have to listen, I have to seek to understand you, I have to not just hear what you're saying, but what's behind what you're saying, and that's kind of this pursuit of clarity. I have to really be clear with what I'm bringing to the table, what you're really dealing with, and distilling it down. Only then can we really get to reconciliation, right? But reconciliation is the heart of the gospel. I mean, the whole gospel is about Jesus, reconciling us to the Father. And so we can't preach a gospel of reconciliation. And Paul says we are given the ministry of reconciliation mm-hmm. and yet at the same time refuse to reconcile. That just doesn't, that's not congruent. And I think about what Paul said in Romans 12:18, as much as it depends on you, live at peace with all men.
Right.
I understand that there are going to be some people you just can't get to reconciliation with. And I understand for a lot of reasons, but it should be our pursuit.
Absolutely. Reconciliation, or that clarity that you need to reconcile, to me what comes up is understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding yourself and seeking to understand the other person. I mean, one of the most important things that I do when I'm in therapy with, whether it's an individual or a couple or even a family, is I want to really get in there and understand their world. Mm. And that takes time. It takes being willing to, kind of lay aside, my own understanding or my own view of how I think they should be or the way things should be. I have to lay that aside and have to say, okay, what is this person really experiencing? And how can I make sense of it? Because once I can understand that and make sense of it, then maybe a lot of their behavior, a lot of their, reactions begin to make sense. I'm not saying their reactions or behaviors are always healthy. They're not. But they make sense in light of what they're feeling and what they're needing and not getting.
Mm, absolutely.
Well, that's good. So when we think about this, and I think this conversation about reconciliation is so critical mm-hmm. Because it really gets to the heart of what the win is in resolving the conflict. But as we kind of move into this idea of what steps do we need to take in resolving conflict? I know that you guys think that it typically, it's this idea that, hey, I just want to get to the facts. Give me the facts and let's get to the heart of that. And if we can get to the heart of those facts, then we can get to the heart of the issue. And I think you guys see that very differently than most people. So I'd love to start with this idea, because you both have talked a lot, not only to our staff team and to mm-hmm. others, and as we've been walking church ministry leaders through particular conflicts they may be rolling through, we always start with this step that we call beginning with the heart.
Yeah.
And we've kind of broken it down in an acronym. Go figure that. But
that's how you know it's from God, right? It's either alliterated or it's an acronym.
Right, that's right.
So let's dive into this strategy. Let's talk about it, because this is really at the heart of our time today on this podcast, is this first step in resolving conflict, in other words, to de-escalate this emotion, to get understanding, to have some clarity. I've got to start with the heart, not with the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, Glenn, this is the big stumbling block for a lot of people, and I say especially those that are kind of less emotionally in tune and more just give me the facts kind of people. I think maybe Dr. Raleigh, you correct me, but I think some personalities just kind of lean that direction.
Sure.
And it's like, man, if you could just understand what I'm saying, then I'll clearly you'll understand it and you won't be mad anymore. Mm-hmm. And we misunderstand the fact that our emotions have now kicked in. And when you're talking to someone with facts and information and you're not addressing the emotion that they're feeling, they're not hearing anything that you're saying. In fact, they're getting more angry because right. they think you're not listening mm-hmm. to them. And I've seen this multiple times in my own experience. I'm sitting here trying to de-escalate it, but I'm giving them facts. I'm not addressing their mm-hmm. emotion. If anything, they're perceived that I'm minimizing their emotion, right. which just makes it even greater. And so what we're saying is you have to address the emotion right off the top, not right. speaking to the head, that is to facts. We'll get to that later, mm-hmm. but speaking to the heart and their emotion. So Dr. Raleigh, why is that so important? And why is it that just talking about facts right off the bat doesn't seem to work?
Well, the short answer to that is because emotions tell us what matters. I mean, in our Western society, once we get to about 6 years old, 5-6 years old, and we go to school, it's like our oldest information processing system, which is our emotional system, gets pushed to the side, and we focus on our logic, our prefrontal cortex, reasoning, executive function. That's where we have our language. That's where we have our numbers. That's where we have facts. You know, all that stuff is centered right in that and we need it, that prefrontal cortex. We need it for all of our executive functioning. But what has been online for us for, you know, the first 5-6 years of our life, and it's still there, but it gets minimized. And so we begin to concentrate mainly on just the facts, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And we kind of tend to let that drift, and we don't stay aware of what we're feeling. But that information, that's all emotions are. They're just an information processing system. Like I said, it's what's online when we're born, even before we're born, I believe. And so it's important that we tune that. You know, we stay in tune with those emotions. We all have them, but we're not always aware of what they really mean. So that's part of our own clarity, right, is understanding why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. You know, what does this mean? Because, again, those emotions tell us what matters. And when emotions come up, then we know immediately there's something big happening here. I might not understand the meaning of it for this person. I might not understand why this is so important to them, but clearly it is. And so I need to listen carefully, you know. I need to hear them out, and I need to try to understand what this is about, not get rid of it. We tend to say, oh, those pesky emotions, let's get them out right. of the way. It's not, they're just causing trouble.
Right. Yeah, in fact, we minimize them. We act mm-hmm. like, well, you're just being emotional.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a negative thing.
God is emotional.
Right. Last
He's
we checked.
Very emotional.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of emotions uh-huh. that he expresses.
Exactly.
And so it's good for you just to remind us that emotions are a big part of who we are mm-hmm. and a big part of any conflict.
Right.
And we ignore them really to our own peril.
We do.
And the thing that we actually are trying to push away is the thing we need to address first.
Exactly.
That's kind of the unexpected aha in this is that we think if we get to facts first, mm-hmm. then we
clear up the misunderstanding.
Right. But we really need to lean into the emotions mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
And
which is hard because they're scary.
They are.
They're scary, especially big emotions, you know,
right.
our secondary emotions, which are anger mm-hmm. and irritation and frustration, which is typically what we encounter in conflict, right?
Right.
And they're big and they're scary. And like most people, we don't want to go in where the bear is, you know, going to rip us apart. We're going to want to back away from that as quickly
yes.
as possible. So that fight, yes. that flight, that freeze kicks in
mm-hmm.
when we get caught in fear at someone else's big emotions.
So what we're going to do here, Glenn, is talk a little bit about a pathway, a little track, a little acronym that you could follow to do that.
Mm-hmm.
that you engage with the emotions right off the bat.
Yeah.
So it's a little acronym that we're looking at, HEART, so H-E-A-R-T.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first, the H in this is to hear them out, which is what you had mentioned just then.
Yeah.
But to actually lean into the conversation, say, let me hear.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you're concerned about. Tell me what's going through your heart, what's going through your mind, and hear them out. And some people are very quick to tell you, all right? They're mm-hmm. they're ready to let somebody have it.
Yeah.
So they're very quick. Some people are not. You know, they almost do the opposite. They shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And in trying to get them to express what they're concerned about is difficult to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is why I think this is so important, this idea, this hearing them out. It starts here, and it requires that we're, you know, I've heard both of you say this requires that we really get really good at asking good questions
mm-hmm.
so that we can begin to listen well and begin to really hear those emotions come forward. As difficult as it may be to hear them, it allows us to begin to start to gain more understanding of why they feel right, wrong, or indifferent, mm-hmm. why they feel the way they do. Is mm-hmm. is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, and I tell you what is hard in all this, and Dr. Riley, I'd love to hear you speak to this, is let's say Glenn and I are having a conflict, and I can tell he's upset because his ears are red. And so we're having this conflict, and I said, Glenn, I really want to hear you out. And he says, well, you do such and such, and you do such. I mean, it's, you know, usually when somebody's mad at you, they're kind of
blaming.
Yeah, yes. They're letting you have it. And so you're feeling attacked. And so it's so hard to not, well, I didn't say that, and you're wrong on that, and then just give it right back.
Mm-hmm.
But yet that's the absolute worst thing you can do.
Yeah,
really?
We're throwing, you know, gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, because now nobody's hearing anything. That's we're just
right.
shouting at each other.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
And so I think it's almost like you feel that surge within you to want to defend or to want to point out that that's not true or point out some mm-hmm. inaccuracy.
Right.
And what you really need to be doing is listening. So what I'm hearing you say is that you're really upset and you think I did this and this caused you to feel this way and tell me more about that. And right. And
yeah.
You're trying to
yeah.
get, let them vent it out. They need to get it out.
Yeah.
But while you keep your cool.
Right.
So how do you do that?
The one thing to never say is now just calm down.
It doesn't work when you say that?
I think in the history of the world, it's never worked. You know, I mean, I don't have any exact science, you know, data, but I can be pretty sure that in the history of the world, someone's saying, you just need to calm down.
Yeah.
You just need to be calm. Get your emotions under. I don't think that's ever gotten anybody calm. So that's the last thing we need to do is but yeah, we do need to say, oh my gosh, I can see I've done something to upset you, and I'd really like to hear what that is. Because right now, maybe I'm clueless, you know, or maybe I do know,
mm-hmm.
you know, hey, I know that, you know, I said this about you or about, you know, mm-hmm. someone that you care about, and that's upsetting to you. Of course it is. We validate.
Mm.
It's okay that you're angry about this right now. Now, if they're throwing things at me, I may get behind something first.
Right.
Know, right? It's not okay to do that. But I'm going to validate that they have good reason to be angry, whether I know the reason or not or understand
right.
the reason. But I'm just going to validate. They have good reason to be angry. But I also have to keep in mind whatever's underneath anger is what's really going on.
Mm.
And that's either going to be fear, a lot of times it's fear, or pain, or some sort of sadness, okay? Anger masks, it's what we call a secondary emotion. It's not primary, so it's not the main thing that's going on, but it's a good covering to keep them from really getting down to what is really going on. But that's where we need to go. We need to kind of get beneath the anger to hear
yeah.
what's underneath that anger.
How do you get them? How do you create an environment where people feel safe enough or welcome enough to share what they're concerned about without coming across as patronizing.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes you go, well, tell me more about that. Obviously you're upset. Well, that just, you know, that you're saying the right words, but it's coming across.
It's how we say it.
Yes. Yeah. It's disingenuous or patronizing.
Right. Or I'm just checking a box. Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Like you said, wow, I can tell that you're upset. I mean, that even that is kind of helpful. Just say, okay, you know, I can tell that you're upset about this, and I want to hear what's.
I really do want to know. Look them in the eye, you know. I mean, that's the main thing. Don't be on your phone. You know, yeah, I can see you're upset. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, but I would say never do this over text.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if someone's in really upset with you, that's a face to face meeting always. You know, but if we're going to really get underneath someone's anger and get down to what it is that's really upsetting them, we have to keep our own anger in check. And that's hard. You know, what we're asking leaders to do is not the easy stuff. That's
right.
Why they're in leadership, right? You
that's
know?
Right.
And so, and to realize, okay, this person is angry, but there's something bigger going on than just whatever thing they're angry about, you know?
I remember sitting in an office with an executive leader. This guy was a CEO of a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy that had been in the hospital that had a bad experience.
Mm.
And I happened to be in the room with him and this executive leader. And the guy that had the bad experience was a former surgeon and a lawyer.
Mm. Wow.
And so this is charged right off the bat, like this could go south.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching this guy, you know, expressing his angst with how something went down in the hospital. But what I remember is I was watching that executive leader the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And man, he just kept his cool the whole time. He was very thoughtful and listened well, never got defensive.
Wow.
Never bristled up, never ever did that, but just kind of created this opportunity for him to share and was very honoring in what he said to him. And I thought, wow, he did a great job of, you know, taking the heat out of that moment and allowing this man to share what was upsetting to him without it escalating up to threats or something like that.
I would say it's, I heard Sue Johnson talk about this. She was the originator of emotionally focused therapy, wonderful therapist and researcher. And one of the things she said is when you encounter those moments when people are highly escalated, that what they need is your right brain to their right brain. They need the comfort and soothing that a stronger, other, more controlled brain has because they're dysregulated and they're off balance in that moment. Mm-hmm. She said it's very much like when a mother takes a crying baby that's very upset, having a fit. What does that mother do? Does that mother say, listen, if you would just, you know, realize it's just going to be a few minutes before I get dinner, you know, you wouldn't be so. She doesn't go to logic.
Right.
That mother begins to hold that baby, talk to that baby, console that baby in soothing tones, not patronizing, and I get how we could go there, but right. Just to say, you know, hey, we bring our tone down. We stay, you know, with them where they are, you know, trying to work this down until we can see that they've gotten out what they need to get out.
Yeah, I love that. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath.
Exactly.
Right? So gentle answer. If you're experiencing wrath, then you don't want to escalate that more.
That's right.
You almost want to go the opposite. If they're mm-hmm. escalating it, you're de-escalating
right.
in order to, like you said, to help them regulate
right.
in that moment. Because if they're that angry, they're mm-hmm. not fully regulate, as you said,
right.
fully in control of themselves
right.
many times. And so you're bringing it down
mm-hmm.
in a way that's honoring to them. I remember I've done it the opposite. Like, let's say somebody, I remember in my early married days, this was so terrible. Liz would be upset about something and I would say, well, what's wrong? And of course she would say, nothing. And I'm like, well, of course there's something wrong because you're freezing me out over here with the cold shoulder, you know, just what's wrong. And then she would say nothing. And then I would go, well, yes, there's something wrong. Why don't you just tell me? And so I'm starting to get
escalated
because I'm like, of course there's something wrong. Just say what it, and what I didn't realize is as I did that, I was create what she's saying when saying nothing is she's saying nothing I feel safe telling you about.
Yeah, that's right.
And I had to learn to de-escalate. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, I created an environment that she felt like I could say it and it wouldn't
right.
blow up.
Right.
And that was a huge learning for me as a young married
yeah.
husband. And it sure carries on into leadership as well.
Right. Absolutely, it does.
100%. I mean, it's just so good when we think about this idea of when we start with the heart, we begin mm-hmm. with hearing them out.
That's right.
And that requires a lot of patience, a lot of being soft tones,
mm-hmm.
you know, your demeanor, even your body language, how you're holding your body. So all of these things
right.
that you're saying are so important to making sure that we really hear this individual out. But then we kind of move to this, to the E of this formula, this pathway, mm-hmm. Which is the to empathize.
Yes.
Which is a critical as well. So let's talk about this second step. When we say to empathize, what are we exactly trying to get at?
Yeah, you want to talk a little bit about empathy. Yeah. Empathy and sympathy, two different things, right?
Very different things, yeah. Empathy is, I love this definition, empathy is a work of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we have to imagine what it must be like to be this person in this moment.
I love that.
Isn't that a great definition?
Oh, that's worth the whole podcast right there. Because it's so true.
It is.
Because you're not that person,
that's
and
right.
you probably wouldn't feel the way they feel about it.
That's
in the
right.
moment.
You haven't had the same experience.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you have to imagine what they are feeling like, what's on them, what's causing them to feel this way, what yeah. are they thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what must it be like to be this person and experience me the way they've experienced me. So it's a real work of imagination.
It's always know. Great to experience me, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not.
If so, that's the way you feel, then
yeah, that's
just,
right.
I just want you to know that I hear what you're saying.
Oh, thank you, Glenn. Yeah. I'm feeling so warm right now.
But sympathy doesn't do that.
Right.
Sympathy is not an act of the imagination. Sympathy just goes, yeah, that must suck for you.
Yeah.
I mean, right. that's kind of what sympathy does, you know. Yeah. It's that sense of, yeah, that's a tough thing you're going through. Good luck with that. That's
right.
sympathy. But empathy says, golly, I can only imagine how dark that must feel when you're all alone like that. And there's nobody you can call on. And you're just there in it all by yourself. That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
That's empathy. Empathy says, mm-hmm. let me get in it. I love to come up with word pictures, you know. To me, that's one of the best ways to create empathy is with, you know, since it's an act of the imagination. Can I bring up a scene, some sort of vivid imagery that I can use, a metaphor that helps me get in and feel what this person is feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that work of imagination, that takes work.
Yeah, it does.
It's a work of imagination.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of effort. And I'm just thinking, you know, maybe this is reflecting my own problem, but sometimes I don't necessarily want to get that way. I don't want to do the work.
No, it gets messy.
I don't want to have to empathize.
Brings
and
up our own pain.
Right, because I just want to just be over with it or villainize this person or demonize this person and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
And to have to sit there and try to hear, take the first blast of their frustration, to de-escalate it, to really hear them out fully, and then to try to empathize with, man, if I can totally see how you could get to this place
mm-hmm.
because here you are, you did this and you did this and this, and this is what you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, but it feels like from the other person that I'm agreeing with them. And
yeah.
sometimes we're not in agreement.
Right.
But what you're saying is that you're not agreeing with them. You're just mm-hmm. understanding. It's that,
right.
again, back to that clarity. You're
yeah.
really understanding. And the more they feel like you understand them,
mm-hmm.
boy,
the more heard they feel.
Yes. They,
yeah.
That tension just starts to dissolve and their heart
Absolutely.
Begins to open.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to happen for reconciliation.
That's right.
Place.
That's right.
I would probably say you know, as I'm listening to you guys, is that it's this idea of really being emotionally engaged.
That's right.
If we're really going to get to the heart of the issue, we have to be very emotionally engaged. And that takes a lot, like you're saying, it takes a ton of work. And I think maybe sometimes what short circuits are even our ability to perhaps really resolve conflict is one or both parties don't even have the emotional bandwidth. And so, you know, sometimes it requires there to be a need to even work it out with yourself to say, am I emotionally prepared to, as I'm working through this conflict, to do the hard work? Or do I need to take some time to get myself in a place where I'm emotionally prepared so that I really, we can really bring great resolution to this situation?
Right.
Because we can if I'm not emotionally ready to engage at this level.
Right.
What a great question to ask yourself. You know, what are my emotions coming into this?
And how am I feeling?
And how am I feeling about this?
Being in tune with ourself.
I remember being in a conflict one time, and we were dealing with this issue and, that was going on. And the person asked me, he said, well, how do you feel about it? And it was the most awkward thing because I thought, I haven't even thought about how I feel about this. You know, and I guess in that moment, it was good. I mean, I was able to say how I felt, but it also was a reminder that I really haven't checked my own emotional feelings or responses to this before I got into here.
Right.
And that would have probably, I probably would have been better in the in resolving that conflict if I had gone in, before I went into the meeting, say, okay, Craig, how are you doing? You
know?
Or Lord, show me, what are my emotions? And
right.
Where am I off track and what am I feeling and how can I move forward in this situation?
So we've talked about, you know, the first part of this pathway to getting really towards resolution is we start with this, the heart, which begins with hearing them out. Then we empathize with them. Then the next step is to, with this A, which is to apologize. So let's talk a little bit about that. I like to think of this as where the magic happens, right? So to speak. So once you've heard them respond and you've responded with empathy, you've been looking them in the eye, you know, now it's moving, you're going to be going a long way towards this idea of reconciliation. So what are we doing when we do the work of apologizing?
Yeah, I just think it's acknowledging the offense. And it may be a personal offense. It may be something I did to you.
Right.
I said something and it was very insensitive. And now that I've empathized, you know, I'm more aware of the impact.
Yeah.
What I thought was probably initially not a big deal. Why are you taking it so hard? You know, that kind of thing where I'm minimizing them. Well, I've gone through this work of hearing them and then empathizing. And then I kind of feel it that, man, what I said was really, that felt a lot harder than what I understood in the moment. And so if it's a personal offense, then I'm owning up to that. I'm owning my part of the offense in how I did it. And 9 times out of 10, if there's a conflict, usually there was some contribution that I made or somebody made to this.
Right.
Sometimes the apology isn't for you. Maybe it's just for the organization or how they were handled in the organization.
Sure.
Back to that executive, you know, he had to acknowledge the mishaps that happened. He didn't do it personally, but he does it as a representative. And I think in leaders, a lot of times we have to say, okay, hey, we should have communicated better. You should have known this in advance. You know, you have every right to be upset because we left your kid at camp or something, you know, whatever the case may be.
Oh, gosh.
whatever the offense is that you are able to do that without stubbornly digging in your heels and refusing to admit any fault. In fact, I found that if I am the first one to offer an apology, it gives them a lot.
Opens the door.
Yeah, it's opened the door for them to do the same.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting for them to go first, kind of playing chicken with the apology.
Yeah, yeah. I want to just say this about apologizing. It has to be sincere. It can't just be, oh, I'm sorry. You know, it can't be.
I'm sorry, you feel that
I'm
way.
I'm sorry, you feel that way. That's one of the worst yeah,
that's
things you can say,
too. That's another one don't say.
Or it can't be, I'm sorry you feel that way. I didn't mean to. Anytime we follow that with intent, our intent, well, I didn't mean to hurt you. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to, you know, say something that would upset you. Well, you just dismissed. Mm-hmm. First, you negated your apology, but then you dismissed the fact that this person is hurting over something that was said or done, you know. So I would say there is a time and place to convey intent, but it's not here. Mm. It's not at this point.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Because I think that probably more times than not is what we often do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we might even do these first two steps really well, hearing them out, empathizing, and then we get to apology, and then we do something similar to that, mm-hmm. and now we've just—
You just blew it
blew
up.
It off, mm-hmm. the whole situation.
You're starting all over again now.
Yeah.
So it just is important right. to really just acknowledge what I did was wrong.
That's right. Just owning it.
Would you please forgive me?
Yeah. Yeah. Just owning it. A lot of what I hear in couples work is one or the other wants their spouse to acknowledge and understand the impact mm-hmm. of what their spouse had done. So it's not enough just to hear, I'm sorry. It's, I'm sorry that I hurt you. I understand that by me doing X, why that hurt you, that it made you feel alone. It made you feel forgotten about, unwanted. You know,
right.
To link it with that says, oh, I get it. I get it. And I understand the impact of my actions or my words on you. And intent doesn't ever convey there whenever, if we're just, you know, kind of flesh that out about what we're apologizing for, we don't leave any room for intent.
Right.
So when when we really are apologizing, what we're essentially doing is we're inviting the grace of God into that situation mm-hmm. and into our lives together in that yeah. moment.
Yeah. And, you know, mm-hmm. Glenn, that requires humility.
Yes.
I mean, for me to own my part of the offense
right.
requires a humility on my part mm-hmm. to realize that I'm not, you know, I'm not above that. And it puts myself in a posture of humility. And I just think about James 4:6, you know, God opposes the proud, gives grace mm-hmm. to the humble, gives favor to the humble. If we want the favor of healed relationships, we've got to lead the way. And yeah. I think as leaders, we don't need to think, well, I'm not going to apologize to them. You know, I'm the pastor of this church, you know, or I'm the this, da, 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 you know, or I was in the right or whatever the case. All those statements are a statement of pride in many ways.
Right.
And I don't want to show any kind of weakness by acknowledging an offense, but actually that shows your strength when you yeah. can do that. Mm-hmm. And it endears people to you.
Yeah.
I mean, when you own up to the offense and you apologize sincerely, it's really counterintuitive, but that's not a position of weakness as no. we would think it to be. It's yeah. a position of strength.
Right. It takes yes. vulnerability to be humble, you know, and vulnerability draws people to us. Mm. Yeah. Humility draws people to us.
All right, so this, we've talked about hearing out, we've talked empathy, we've talked apology. Now this R mm-hmm. is to repeat. So as all of us know, sometimes in the midst of a conflict, not all conflict is resolved in the first pass-by.
That's exactly right.
So
that's why repeat is there.
That's right. So let's get to the heart of it's pretty self-explanatory, but I think it's important at least for us to just be open about it and say sometimes you gotta recycle it back again to get yeah. at the heart, because mm-hmm. really if the goal is reconciliation,
that's right, yeah,
then we've got to do whatever it takes, and it means if we get to those up to the apology and we're still not hitting the mark, we got to go back.
That's a good Correct? Point, Glenn. If reconciliation is the goal, not just, you know, getting this person off my back
right.
or getting this, you know, person to shut up, and stop whining or whatever, and be, or stop being mad at me. That there's a big difference between getting people to stop being mad or cooperating with us and reconciliation.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
No doubt about it. And it does take a continual process. And a lot of times what happens is we might start off pretty good. You know, we're hearing and we maybe even empathize a little bit. And then we get defensive and, you know, it blows up and you're starting back at square one again. And I'm sure you see this all the time.
All the time.
In couples counseling. And it's almost like you just, you can't quite get there.
Two steps forward, five steps backwards.
Right. And it's over and over and over. Yeah. And it's exhausting for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I guess you just have to really pray that the Holy Spirit will give you peace and discernment and love and grace in that moment to constantly see it through and keep, if it fires back up, well, you did it out, you know, well, this, let's just keep working it out, keep working it. But I have seen that when you keep working it out and stay at that line of reconciliation, keeping that as your goal, not winning the argument.
Right.
But winning the relationship.
Right.
Reconciling the relationship.
That's the difference right there.
Then you begin to see the heart of that person open.
Mm-hmm.
And it just may take time. And I think, I'll just say this for leaders, you may say, well, I tried that.
Yeah.
Well, we come back again. And,
that's right.
And we come back again and we come back again because it may be that years of offense isn't going to be solved in one conversation.
That's right. The deeper the hurt, the longer this will take.
Yeah.
Well, and you quoted towards the front of our podcast, you talked about, you know, do whatever we can to live at peace mm-hmm. with everyone, right? So if I'm not, I got to do, even if it means coming back to it again and again and again and again until it gets resolved,
right?
Then I'll be willing to repeat. And sometimes, and I, Dr. Riley, maybe you could speak to this real quickly. Sometimes that repeat doesn't mean we're going to do it right then and there. It might mean we might need to take a bit of a break for maybe
absolutely.
A couple days or a week or so. But we're saying, hey, we're going to reschedule and we're going to address this. Mm-hmm. We're not just dismissing it and hoping it goes away.
That's right.
But maybe bring some space to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that we can come back, think about process, and then mm-hmm. come back ready to even dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I think that's so important, especially for someone who's been offended, because a lot of times they want it resolved right then and there, you know. And if we can't get through all of it, because maybe there's multiple hurts and that can't all be done all at once, to just say, look, I'm committed to this process of getting this right with you, of reconciling the relationship, but we're not going to get it all done in one sitting. So let's take a break. Let's come back in a week, or let's come back, you know, tomorrow. With couples, I tell this all the time, you know, whoever says, look, time out, we need to take a time out, is the person who needs to say time in, you know. And to make sure that that person who needs to have their offense completely soothed and calmed and taken care of, that they have an assurance this is not going to get dropped. This is not going to get forgotten about.
We're coming back to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this last piece of this heart formula, this pathway towards reconciliation, it starts again with the heart, not with the head, is the letter T, which is transition to problem solving. And this is where we start to begin to think about what are some of the possibilities, right, of how we might could bring some reconciliation. How do we, this is again, that transition to saying, what are some of the possibilities of where we could go with this right. to reconcile?
You know, I think sometimes, and I've been in situations like this where the hard work was just speaking to the heart.
That's right.
You know, de-escalating, understanding, empathy, hearing, apology. And then the solution just happens. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, okay, well, you know, we're good. And then we move forward.
Right.
And or it's like, okay, well, you just go ahead and take that trip, or you go ahead and do whatever the thing is. And it wasn't really, it was very quickly resolved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so don't be surprised if sometimes this is the hard work on the front end,
mm-hmm.
and the solution comes up very quickly. But sometimes it's not that, not
that's
that
right.
way. Sometimes it's much more complicated. There's a lot more things at play, and so once the heart is open and the emotions are down, in fact, you're kind of connected now because we have self-respect, self-understanding, self-honoring. Now it's like, okay, well, how can we shift gears here and put our heads together? Now we're not talking from the heart. Now we're talking, we're going to move to the head. How can we really think this through and figure out a solution that works best for everybody?
Yeah.
And so that's really what we're going to be talking about in the next podcast. Yeah. But I think it's important to know that there has to be some element of transition. You don't want to do that too fast. You don't want to try to get to the head too quickly.
That's right.
You have to be sure that there's a strong connection. But I remember back again in my early married days, you know, Liz would, I'd say, look, we both love each other. We're smart adults, you know. The problem's over here. Our problem isn't between us. The problem is over here. Let's work to, let's double team on this problem.
Right.
Let's both put our efforts toward solving this problem together. Mm-hmm. And almost like impersonalizing the problem as something outside of one another.
Yeah.
Seemed to really invite this problem-solving strategy.
Kind of a teamwork.
Yeah, we're working on this together as a team.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. And I have really enjoyed our time together as we've talked today just really about this idea. What's a pathway? So again, when we think about conflict, conflict's inevitable. It's going to happen. Yep. As ministry leaders, as church leaders, we are going to face conflict. It's going to happen. We can't run from it. We can't hide from it. We've got to really address it. And we've talked about this idea that really at the end of the day, that to really get at it, reconciliation is the goal. And to really have reconciliation, we cannot go to the head first. We have to start with the heart,
right?
By hearing them out, by empathizing, by apology, through apology as well, and then repeating, and then transitioning into some solutions. So in our next podcast, we're going to be talking then about this next stage in this reconciliation process is actually moving to the head and really working towards now leaning into facts, because we've been able to address some of the more emotional things so that we can really do some of this other work that's required to get to really towards being reconciled with this other individual or person. So again, thank you to both of you for taking the time to be here today. It's been great having you on this episode. And I also want to let you know, listeners, that you can get a free ebook called Fight Right. It's really addressing all the things that we're going to be talking about. You can get that on the show link, show notes link, and you can go down and get that, and it will be a great resource for you as you're really working to address conflict as a leader. Thanks, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys on our next episode.
Are you making disciples in your church? How would you know for sure? You know, most pastors agree that the church's mission is to make disciples, but when you ask them, how do you do this? Well, the room falls silent. What if there was a clear pathway for making disciples? Listen, that pathway actually exists. As a younger pastor, I realized that I was actually following ministry trends more than I was following Jesus' model for ministry. And that reality led me to study the life of Christ. And in that process, I discovered how Jesus transformed common, ordinary men into world changers. And we have distilled that training into the Grow Series. The Grow Series is a 3-book disciple-making tool that trains men and women on how to walk with God, how to reach their world, and how to invest in a few. Each book is just 7 weeks and designed to be used in a small group or in any really disciple-making context. Churches across the country and around the world are using the Grow Series and seeing their church really begin to multiply disciples like Jesus. Why not check out the Grow Series and see how it can help you make disciples who multiply? Check out this and other great resources at disciplefirst.com. That's disciplefirst.com.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple-making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.